Hi, and welcome to our next Monkey Gaming podcast. And today we are doing something very different. We're actually today having an accessible technology discussion that I'm sure at some point throughout the podcasts in many areas it will relate back to gaming. I think gaming will inevitably creep into our conversation as well. So,
I mean, what else is technology for, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't play games on it, why? Why bother?
Well, independence might come into this as well, which is what our organisation is.
But why have independence without games? Why? I mean, why? Surely all roads lead to gaming, no?
This is James again, by the way. That's.
I feel as though everything I do in my life, Stuart, is in aid of playing more and better games.
Yes, you're lucky. You've got that privilege. But yeah, we're just having a full accessibility discussion. I think we'll be talking about Apple, Android, won't we, James? Windows,
yeah.
Mac. We're going to try and cover a broad array of even screen readers, you know, like JAWS, we'll maybe have a wee touch on. So this might be quite a long discussion, but we'll cover a lot of broad topics. And again, hopefully people will find this quite interesting. So
yeah.
What do you think? I'll just maybe say, if you don't mind, James, that James has really only been working with me for maybe a couple of months.
Yeah.
Is it as long as that?
Oh man, it is as long as that. That's crazy.
It's mad.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's 8 weeks. But we have got a lot done. And it was just really interesting when you came in, James, you really didn't know much about accessibility on iPhones or anything
at all,
did you? Yeah. And that's a funny one, because until, say you're sighted, then you're not going to be looking under settings, general, accessibility, voiceover, you know, and it's just, if I can use a genuine ignorance, you know, because if you don't need it, then why look for it?
So, yeah, I remember being so amazed when you first showed me that the iPhone was capable of doing that, because nobody I knew had, you know, spoken about it. It wasn't like in all the like the tech roundups and the reviews and the comparisons, they talk about, you know, exact screen length and battery life and how much RAM it has, you know, and what this new version of the operating system is like in the minute details. But nobody mentions anything to do with accessibility. I never even knew VoiceOver was a thing. I thought you had to, you know, pay for it separately.
VoiceOver is the built-in screen reader, which comes built into all Apple devices, and it comes for free, just to clarify. And you know, actually, James, there's a thing. You know what people confuse VoiceOver with, who know about it? Some people confuse it with Siri, which is a completely different animal. And it's not that I don't like Siri, but, you know, it'll only take you so far.
It's less functional, isn't it? It's more kind of novelty value, whereas VoiceOver is more, as far as I understand.
And sighted people, you know, you can use Siri just as well as I can. You know, sighted people use it just as well as visually impaired people. But like with Siri, as an example, you know how I say it'll only take you so far. Then, so like this morning, I missed the football last night, so I says to it, Premier League scores. I asked Siri, you know, look up the Premier League scores. And it did it. You know, it done the donkey work. But what it did was it then said, here's a table of all the Premier League scores and what you actually had to do. So it didn't read them out. Mm. It actually had to then use VoiceOver to actually scroll through the Premier League scores. So the best way is to use the two of them in tandem, if you can. It's quite an interesting couple of features on the iPhone.
Do you have any experience with OK Google? I think that's the Android equivalent.
I think I've maybe used it a couple of times, and it seems to work fairly well. I just had an Android device to hand, and somebody, one of my clients, was wondering where the nearest Carphone warehouse was. And I said, so, you know, OK Google, where is the nearest Carphone warehouse? And it did it. You know, it brought a wee map up on the screen, and, you know, I was able to use, you know, the gestures to get it to describe where it was in Kirkcaldy as well. And it really is worthwhile, isn't it, when it does things like that and saves you a lot of work
as well. Definitely. I remember when the first iteration of voice control software, I don't know what the proper term is, but came out, and it's terrible. Like, you couldn't, like, you would say something, and especially if you weren't an American, you know, God forbid you were Scottish. If you're English, it was sort of okay, but God forbid you were Scottish, seriously. Yeah. You would say, like, okay, search for, you know, search for gaming, and it just wouldn't register what you're saying at all. But it's really come a long way, hasn't it? The software actually does recognise a speech, especially from a lot of different accents now, which I think is really impressive.
My accent is really broad. I was having a discussion with a client about this yesterday. My accent is very, very broad Scots, as she put it. And sometimes Siri will not pick my things up at all. I was trying to get onto... I don't know whether I might need to edit this out, we'll see, but I was trying to get on.
What were you trying to get on? Why would you say you might need to edit
it? I've covered my tracks right away there, haven't I? It should be fine, actually.
I might need to make sure the police don't get their hands on this, yeah, but...
And we're not going back to duck people again.
Oh, God.
I was trying to search for guide dogs, because recently there had been a guide dog that had been stolen, and I had asked it, search the web for the guide dog's website, and it came back, I can't find anything on gay dogs.
Wow.
And I just went, oh no. And I just burst out laughing, but it was my accent, I can't find anything on gay dogs.
And I just, was that Siri?
That was Siri.
Maybe Siri just really has a grudge against guide dogs and felt the need to disparage them. Maybe that was Siri's commentary.
It's smart. Even like the, you know how you can, like on your keyboard with Siri, you can dictate, you know, like a message and things like that.
Yeah.
So there's a pub where I stay in Lochgelly called The Old Ship. And I'd text my cousin saying, I'll see you in The Old Ship in 10 minutes. And it didn't quite pick up ship, it put it as shop, you know. And it's just so it's not, as I say, it's not that I don't like Siri, but I'm so used to, you know, the voiceover, the gestural language is ingrained in my brain that I would rather, supposing it takes me 2 more minutes, you know, 2 minutes longer, I'd rather do the thing and do it right rather than have to start scrolling through messages and deleting. But as I say, it's not that I don't, Siri is useful for an awful lot of
It's useful
things.
For like filling menu stuff, isn't it? Because you can hold down the button and just say, you know, call Steve, and then
that's
just
it.
Do it. You don't have to scroll through the pages and then navigate and then go to Steve and then call.
Do you know what I find really useful? I got the bus back from work one day, and the bus driver had forgot to let me off at the right stop, and I was only one stop too far away from my usual bit. You know, being completely blind, I had no idea where I was.
Yeah.
And I pressed the home button and Siri pinged, and I says to it, tell me how to get home. And it wasn't quite accurate, but it got me back. You know, it got me on the right track.
Uh-huh.
And I just turned the corner and I just go, oh, I know where I am now. And obviously I had to put my own contact details, you know, my address and things in for it to work that way.
Yeah.
But what a great wee feature,
That's
isn't
incredible.
It?
Incredible.
So, you know, it wasn't quite, it was maybe a good few feet out, but I was on the right road. You know, so you can't. You know, that's your safety, that, you know, I've had, that's a wee bit of more independence, and so, you know, Siri really, and I think Siri's just only going to get better and better and better, isn't it, James?
Yeah,
and
you said it wasn't perfect, at one point in the future, it will be perfect, like, it'll, you know, it's...
But, you wonder, I think that'll happen with voiceover, you know, so, like, at the moment, touching on game, and a bugbear, which I've mentioned in previous podcasts, but, you know, like, how... football or a game with pictures in it. James and I both think maybe in the future that voiceover is just going to end up reading absolutely everything, regardless of gaming engines or, you know, whether the app is designed specifically for voiceover or not. It's just going to end up doing everything. What do you think, James?
Yeah,
think
definitely. I mean, there's already. I'm pretty sure there's already, you know, software where you can point your smartphone at a piece of paper that has a message written on it and have it translate it on the fly to some other language. So obviously, the technology to recognize characters of text exists. It's just a matter of integrating it into VoiceOver, not having to have it as the plain text.
Yeah, and it's coming. I mean, there's like. Apps, I can use an app. There's a couple you can use. I use KNFB Reader, it's called, and it was £80, this app, which was, you know, extortionate. But Now, when a letter comes through the door, I just take my iPhone, point the camera at the letter, and do a double tap gesture on the screen with this KNFB reader, and it reads a letter to you. You know, so you're not.
It's excellent.
It's mad, isn't it? You know, Prismo is a much cheaper app, but has less scanning app that does the same thing. That's only $6.99, but it does have less features, and it seems a wee bit less reliable to me. But again, you know, it still does the job. I'm, you know, I've got a lovely job that I'm able to afford that KNFB reader. So and you know, you've got a sat nav that does specifically for blind people. You know, so I get you've got apps that tell you when your bus stop's coming up. We've kind of went right on to smart technology, but it's just the difference it's making, isn't it?
That's James. It's incredible. It's like it really is like something out of sci-fi. You know, it's actually at the point where technology is augmenting and sometimes replacing our senses. You know, it's like you're able to tell where you are on the planet, not from, you know, from any visual cue, but from the phone telling
you. The compass. You're fascinated by the compass on the iPhone 6.
Yeah, I really like how accurate it is. It's like, because obviously it's 360 degrees in a circle, and it's so accurate you can adjust it by 1 degree.
That's just insane, isn't it?
Yeah, that's like, it's a gyroscope inside it, I think. I'm not sure, but whatever it uses to orient itself is super accurate.
And actually, going back to apps on smartphones that make it, I have to mention another two that make my life so much easier. There's one called Digitize, which is a barcode reader. So I know, say, like I'm taking chicken out the fridge, something like that, a box of chicken, and you scan the barcode again through the camera, and it tells you the sell by date, it tells you how, it even gives you cooking instructions, as well as telling you, okay, you know, Bernard Matthews Southern Fried Chicken, or what, Birdseye Southern Fried Chicken, you know, and you just think, you wouldn't know what you were taking out the freezer unless you had it super ordered, you know, and all, like even tins in your cupboard, unless you've got them in a very, very straight order, how do you know what kind of soup or what have you you're taking out? And that's a thing of the past, because this thing just scans the barcode, tells you it's a can of Baxter's tomato soup. If you want cooking instructions, not that you would for soup, but you know, you've got
I might need them for soup. You overestimate so many things.
Do you just see that, you know, where would we have, I don't know where I would have been. Where was I 10 years ago when smartphones didn't exist? I just can't remember, you know, it just,
it amazes me, the amount of problems that a smartphone is able to solve. That's an issue that I'd never really considered, you know, it wasn't something that it's consciously struck me, but that would be a huge problem, like the soup one in particular, because maybe with the package, like in the fridge, maybe you'd be able to feel sort of what the shape was, like you'd know if it was chicken compared to like
sausages or pudding.
But with the soup, if they're all in identical containers,
fantastic, isn't it?
That's seriously cool.
You know, even like change soup between a difference between soup and spaghetti, you just don't know, or pasta. Yeah. You know, you just don't. So the pro and you know like the. The other app is a one called TapTapC, which has just went global, and that allows visually impaired people to actually take a picture of something in front of them, and the app actually describes to you what the picture is, which again is just, is fascinating.
How does it do that? What, like, to what extent does, like, if you did it of like a clock, would it say it was a clock? Would it say
clock
it was a round object?
On a whatever colour of wall it was in the background, clock hanging on a, you know, blue painted wall or whatever it, you know, whatever it was.
Seriously.
I took a picture of I've got my guide dog next to me, and I took a picture of Ron. Now, I don't know how it does this, but I took a picture of Ron, and it came back and said, black short coated lab crossed with retriever. I swear on his
Seriously.
Life.
Seriously.
And I went, how does that know that he's a lab crossed with retriever? I mean, that's no right.
How much was that?
Like, it's free. It's actually free. Completely free now.
What was it called again?
TapTapC. So like tap and C as in S-E-E, you know, see with your eyes. And it's a camera for visually impaired people.
How often does it not get what you're pointing it at?
It does depend. I mean, I don't have any sight, and I do have to be quite careful I used to use it, believe it or not, to identify DVDs that I got through the post. Yeah. You know, I'd take a picture of the front of the front cover, and it would tell me what the DVD was. But one time, I pointed it. I was angling the camera wrong, and it ended up saying DVD lying, edge of DVD lying on a cream-coloured carpet, and it was because I was pointing my phone slightly off kilter. So you do have to get a wee bit of practice with it, but again, the difference that makes
might be the most impressive.
Impressive
what I've heard of. Honestly.
People are blown away, but I'll maybe show you.
There was
a lady that works up the stairs, and I was doing a demonstration, and I point at her, and it says "woman with long brown hair in a pale green dress" or something like that, and I just went, you know, see, you're getting a more a visual idea of what people are look like as well, if that makes sense with it. And it's just, there has to be human input somewhere in there. You know, I know there's a massive database of different objects, but I still think there has to be, it can't be that accurate without human input.
You think there's like one guy just sitting in a
booth somewhere?
Or they've
got some kind of call centre somewhere that, but the fact that it's free.
Does it tell you instantly what you've taken?
Maybe in depending on how difficult the picture is you've taken, sometimes it takes maybe 30 seconds, sometimes it'll take 10.
Okay, and I assume you have to be connected to the internet.
You do indeed, but you do have to be, but you know the apps I described, Digitize, which was the barcode reader, you know, the Blind Square app, which is the sat nav, Travel Line GB, which is your bus stop and train times app. You're all internet or a mobile data plan. So, but you have to be connected to internet to even use the basics, don't you? Most of the time. Uh-huh. So, you know, it's not a. Most people are now connected to the internet anyway.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that you ruled the internet as a basic human right. You know, it's a fundamental part of modern life. So I suppose it makes sense that you'd be expected to be connected.
And smartphones and tablets are even, a part of modern life now. Which is great as well, that, you know, just quickly touching back on gaming, it's great that gaming's, you know, crossed onto this platform as well, but it's the independence that it gives people. You know, that's the thing that, you know, the main part of my job is to train other visually impaired people on how to use smart technology, whether it's iPhone or Android and it's just the independence that these people get. You know, even as simple as sending an email, James, you know, you've no idea how important that is to somebody, you know, and able to do it on a smartphone when they've never used a computer before. It changes their life because they're getting, or maybe through Facebook, you know, say you've got maybe a wee bit of sight pictures on Facebook, they just bring it up on their smartphone.
So when you're teaching people how to use this software, do you notice them having these transformative moments, you know, like, aha, finally, I've gained access to this part of
it? It does take
technology.
Time. Because the voiceover, you know, it's touchscreen based, so there's no tactile buttons, you know, on the touchscreen for them to find, and that does take a long time to. There was one client, I mean, she was 75 years old. Well, it doesn't matter what age she was, but she was, when I first met her, she didn't even know how to turn her iPad on, and I thought, and I don't mind saying it because I've told her this myself, I thought, oh, we're going to be here for a long time. This is going to take us months.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not saying it was my training. She embraced it, and she learned it within 6 weeks. And what she's doing with it now, she's managing her health issues with it, you know, sat navs, diaries. You know, she's made full use of audiobooks. Audiobooks are a huge thing for visually impaired people. You know, she's got all of that on her iPad. Even another lady who was, she was deaf blind, another lady I trained as well, she learned it, believe it or not, in 3 weeks. And it was because she had very, very slight hearing, she had very, very slight hearing left to her. And she used to put a headphone in, and she actually changed the voice to an Irish voice. And now she says, all I want to do is read the news. And she was doing it in 3 weeks with this Irish voice on the
Why the Irish voice? Was that the easiest to hear?
The easiest to hear, apparently. Yes. So we had to. It was again. I thought, you know, we're going to be here. I just can't imagine, you know, not having sight and hearing difficulties. It must have been. And I thought, I think we're going to. I wonder if we'll ever. No disrespect to the lady at all, but I just thought, I wonder if this is going to be the right avenue to. I was going to go down the Braille route with her, and all of a sudden she was away using this iPhone in 3 weeks, and before she just didn't even have a clue that voiceover existed. You know, it's just, and you go out with a spring in your step when you've trained people that, you know are going to benefit.
I can imagine
so much.
That must be a really great feeling to actually to be making a tangible difference in these people's lives.
And it's not that I even see it as a, it's just, you know, I've used, I'm just passing on experiences that I, because I just, especially Apple, I use Apple products, just, I use them at work, I go home, I use them at home, I get up and, you know, the Apple product, the phone wakes me up, the watch wakes me up in the morning, you know, the only thing it doesn't do is cook my meals and brush my teeth for me, probably.
The only thing it doesn't do yet.
Yet, aye.
Give it time, give
it time. But, well, we're getting there, but, oh no, I'm just Apple mad. But, you know, it's great just to, and by the way, some people don't get it. iPads and iPhones and things aren't for everybody, and you just have to take that. At least they've tried it. And if it's not worked, then, you know, it's not for them. There's nothing,
so
nothing you can do.
Do the vast majority of people you work with use iPhones as opposed to Android?
It just depends. iPhones are a bit more pricier, I think, than Android. Am I right in saying?
Absolutely,
in that?
Yeah.
So what people do is they might actually just go and get an Android tablet and just, you know, the accessibility isn't as good from a personal experience. I don't think the accessibility on Android is as good. And it is a lot more easier to get lost in because Android, it's open to so much more platforms, isn't it? You know, like Galaxy, Google, Samsung is Galaxy, isn't it? HTC, you know.
A huge majority of phones are Android.
Yeah, and what happens is they've all got different accessibility stamps on them. You know, everyone, it's not the same. You could be getting TalkBack, which is the equivalent to VoiceOver, is great on a Galaxy, but on an HTC, I just wouldn't give it the time of day, to be honest. You know, it's just not been built in correctly.
Yeah.
And it depends on what type of phone or tablet you get as well. Whereas, and I'm not a salesperson for Apple or anything, by the way. Again, this is just all personal. But with Apple, you can buy any device and you know what you're getting. You know, if that's making, you know, that the gesture will work with them all, whatever Apple device you buy. So, but there's blind people out there. There's hundreds of thousands of blind people out there that are more than happy with an Android device as well.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. And weren't you saying that Android now, maybe they weren't in the past, but now are starting to improve their voiceover equivalent
On the newer devices and the newer versions. So what are we on now? I think we're on like Lollipop version 6 or Marshmallow 6 or some, you know.
Cupcake 5.1.
It seems to be all sweets. Jelly bean, I think there was jelly bean at one stage.
There was gingerbread.
Gingerbread, yeah.
Black Forest Gâteau.
Interesting versions. And again, you see, when you're going back to like gingerbread and things, the accessibility online was terrible. Absolutely awful. But now, when you're looking at, I can't remember whether it's KitKat or Lollipop, or it's something, you know, Marshmallow 6 or something like that, and the accessibility is apparently very, very manageable. You just got to watch you don't get lost sometimes on the screens, because Apple has a way of telling you when you're at the end, you've navigated your way through the whole of a touch screen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Android, you're kind of just going, it's like a loop they've got, so, you know, you're just constantly scrolling.
That seems less useful.
Yeah, but again, it's the same with screen readers. You know, you've got like VoiceOver and, you know, Jaws. You know, I must say Jaws as well are two of the premium screen readers for, you know, whether you're using a Mac or Windows computer. You then have like free screen readers. Well, VoiceOver's free, but you've then like free screen readers such as Window Eyes or NVDA. And they're the equivalent to Jaws, to be honest. And you don't get as much out of them. You know, you're paying maybe £800 for Jaws. Oof. And you're getting what you pay for, but I just grudge paying that when Apple, you just go into the Mac, press Command F5, and you're away. You've got built-in help every step of the way.
And you're so paying... how do VoiceOver and Jaws compare? Because obviously you're paying a lot of money for Jaws.
I mean, they're completely different in terms of navigation. You know, with VoiceOver on the Mac, I would say it was maybe a wee bit harder to learn because you're having to use maybe 3 or 4 keystrokes at the one time, you know, to even do a simple navigation arrow key on the Mac, you know, so to move to the next item on a Mac, you're having to hold down the control and option keys together and then press the right arrow key, you know, to move forward. With Jaws, you're just using the cursor keys. There is a thing on the Mac called Quick Nav, which you can enable, but again, it's very, very advanced stuff, you know. I wouldn't recommend beginners doing it, and Macs are something that I've never really even trained people on, to be honest. I just went out, I got the Apple bug, and I had an iPhone and an iPad anyway, and I went out one day and I thought, I was so sick of Jaws, and because you're on Jaws 17 now, right, and I'm only on Jaws 14 at working at home, and to upgrade I would have to pay an extra £700-800. Maybe even more than that. Actually, was it as much as 1,200? I can't remember, but because I was 3 versions behind, I'm having to pay for the privilege to upgrade. And I just thought, nah, I was totally disillusioned with it. So I went out, bought a Mac, and I'm probably still learning VoiceOver yet on it, actually. But it's a fantastic experience because it does everything. You know, it's built in and I'm interacting with all the built-in facilities, I'm on the internet, it's doing more than what Jaws can do for me, to be honest, at the minute. But again, remember, that is just a personal experience. If you asked other visually impaired people, they love Jaws. And I'm not saying Jaws doesn't have its uses. Again, it's never been my cup of tea. Yeah. So just take what I'm saying with a pinch of salt.
So I mean, that's a pretty strong argument for Apple over both Android and Windows.
Yeah, and like any updates you get for the Apple stuff, it's all free. It's just, you know, knowing how to update it, isn't it, James? Although, is Windows free? Is Windows updates and upgrades and things free, or do you have to?
Well, with Windows, I mean, the service packs are free, where it's essentially a load of bug fixes and small usability changes. But actually the next, you know, operating system, like going from Windows 7 to Windows 8, you know, you have to pay for Windows 8.
Do you?
They did let people upgrade to Windows 10 recently for free, but I think that was a limited time deal and it's done or something. Usually you do have to pay for the next Windows.
There was one client I had that, and again, now I must say, and I've spoke to James about this, I advised the client. She emailed me and she says, I'm sick of Apple's corporate greed because every year I'm having to, you know, to get the best out of them, I have to pay £600-700 for a new phone. Which, you know, a lot of people have this point of view, James, you know, when the new phones come out. So she says, I'm sick of them. I want to go to Android. And actually says to her, look, you've used Android and Apple. You know, you've had a go on Android. I think you go in when you're completely competent using an iPhone, I don't see why you'd want to go to Android when you'd be shooting yourself in the foot. And it's just the way I look at it, because the accessibility, Apple are ahead of the game, to be quite honest still, and in terms of accessibility, and it's so much easier to get lost in Android. So why would you want to go to something substandard when you've got the pinnacle in front of you with an iPhone, just because you've got issues about Apple's corporate greed, you know?
It's interesting because Samsung and whoever is manufacturing the Android phone that you're buying, they're certainly not, you know, a charity. They're not conducting their business based on altruism. They both companies want to make a profit. I think it's interesting because Apple, most smartphone developers, they have they're on now a yearly release cycle. So
that's it.
Every year they'll release a new phone. But I don't think, most people I know, they don't upgrade every year. I would say the average like tech enthusiast person I know upgrades maybe every 2 years.
Yeah.
And then that won't be like the ultra flagship, like £750 model. That'll be like the good sort of average one. So like it wouldn't, say the upgrading today, they probably wouldn't go for like the 128 gigabyte or whatever iPhone 6S Plus.
Yeah.
They'd probably just go for like a regular iPhone 6 or iPhone 6S with like 16 gigabytes of memory, which is actually like £100 cheaper or something.
Yeah.
Which is kind of obscene because memory should be really, you know, cheap and replaceable, which it isn't in iPhones, which is kind of annoying. But yeah, that's an interesting argument. So this person, were they were upgrading every year?
I don't even know they were. I think they had such an old phone and they were going to have to upgrade, and then they looked and they saw the prices that they were going to have to pay.
Yeah.
And I don't know what, I don't know whether they've just went out on a whim and went, oh, I'm sick of, you know, Apple, and I don't know what other people's been telling her.
Yeah, people make these snap decisions based on unusual stuff. I've known people who'll say, right, I'm never using a Windows PC again because, you know, it crashed once, for example. Mm. It's interesting what kind of sways people.
I have to alternate, not at home now. I'm just went completely on, you know, the app, even like the software seem. I got a MacBook Air and it's fast as anything.
Oh, yeah?
You know, the MacBook, you're on the internet in seconds, and I come in here and I go back to, I really have to use more JAWS at my work, you know, that's what's on my laptop.
Uh-huh.
And I just, again, personally, I've hated it for 20 years, and, you know, I think it's just the laptop and the JAWS 14, it's the wrong tap kind of thing, and it's hanging, and it's slow, and it's just... wouldn't be happening if I was on a Mac. That's what I keep thinking to myself.
It depends what Mac, though, doesn't it? Like a Mac from the early 2000s, God.
Well, actually, you know, there's an iMac, as you very well know, James, there's an iMac up the stairs.
Yeah.
Oh, that drives me mad, because if I ever do manage to get on that, it's not connecting to the internet right, and it's not going to update.
Oh, I remember, yeah.
Oh, it drives me mad. But so, again, you've really got to... I mean, I must say, I'm nuts. I go and try and buy new things every year, Apple wise, and then
you are like eating. Their favorite type of customer.
Oh, I'm not eating for a month, and
they're like, never change, Stuart, never change.
I know I should be getting a job with them, but but again, it's just when you love something so much and you embrace something so much, you know, because my mum's right, you know, you're not paying for running a car, which, you know, would cost you so much money a month, wouldn't it? You know, you're not paying for that. You know, if you're not going to the pubs or anything too much, then, you know, treat yourself now and again. That's the way I... But just visually impaired people and even sighted people, it's particularly noticeable with visually impaired people. They're so anti-Apple because they think they're this multi-billion dollar greedy, you know, company.
Yeah.
Which it's a funny...
It is interesting because I think Apple are a multi-billion dollar greedy company. You know, I think they're super greedy, and I think they're extortionate and manipulative. But I also think that the products they make are really good.
I mean, this is the thing that I know I've touched on it already, but I was at an RNIB conference last year called TechShare, and there was a massive live debate from visually impaired people on, you know, different types of product. And I was dying to get up there and say my piece because, you know, okay, and a lot of them were saying, you're paying so much money for, you know, and you're lining Apple's pockets and all the rest of it. You know, very, very hard line, you're not pulling any punches. And there was representatives from Apple there. And I felt like saying, yeah, but, okay, it's a personal thing, but I would rather pay that extra bit more to have the accessibility features that's going to enable me to have a better life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know, and
definitely.
And that didn't seem to come across that well in the conference at all. So it was just, it was a very interesting, and some people do try and make do with free screen readers such as Window Eyes for computers and, you know, another software called Synaptic, which makes Android tablets easier to use. So
okay.
There's so much out there to assist you.
I suppose a lot of people's distaste for Apple comes from the fact that they could get away with charging a lot less than they do. But, I mean, Apple are right now the most profitable company in the world.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to think. a company that in the 90s, you know, was on the verge of bankruptcy.
Yeah,
they fired Steve Jobs. They got, I can't remember his name, they got a new CEO and he was terrible. Steve Jobs once said, I don't know if this is, you know, an apocryphal tale, if this is a lie Steve Jobs has told afterwards, but he said that this new chief executive's catchphrase was, "Where you know, Apple right now is a ship with a hole in the hull and it's sinking.
Yeah.
And I'm going to point it in the right direction."
Like, okay, he's done that.
As though, I don't know. Steve Jobs was a very charismatic guy, wasn't he?
There's a film about him. Actually,
there are two films.
Yeah, Michael Fassbender's in one of them.
And Ashton Kutcher is in another.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Ashton Kutcher is, he's got the mannerisms down. He is so like Steve Jobs, seriously.
Right.
I didn't like the film that much. I haven't seen the Fassbender one.
I just don't know any. I mean, I've only been using Apple products for a couple of years. And I didn't know about the Steve Jobs issues at all. But I think I might need to have a wee squiz at these films.
Check it out. I mean, he's a very interesting guy. You know, it's an interesting story.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if he's a great guy,
but an interesting guy. Is that a great guy? But the sound of it,
Steve Wozniak. Now that guy is awesome. He was like, he was one of the great minds behind Apple.
I don't know this one.
He was one of the lead engineers, like in the early days of Apple. He was like one of the really technical guys, and he got a lot of it off the ground.
You remember like the old Apple Macs in the 80s that you used to play all the old text adventure? I used to play them at school in the 90s. Early 90s in a primary school and used to get all the old text adventure games, and God, you look at how things have advanced now, don't you?
Do you know what I would really like, actually, talking about screen reader software and Siri and stuff evolving? I reckon it'd be really cool if there was a text adventure made that read everything aloud to you, you know, in a fairly naturalistic voice, and you could just talk to it. You didn't have to type in a command. You don't have to say like walk left 5 paces or whatever. You could just say look at chest, or check out the chest, or examine the chest, and it would parse that, and it would.
You could probably do it, you know, with the dictate feature, with the, you know, like when the on-screen keyboard pops up for text adventure games. You could probably do that.
Yeah, I think there'd probably be a workaround. I'd like one that was kind of, you know, naturalistic. I mean, it's probably not possible at the minute, is it, with current technology, like to be super. Super naturalistic, but I think the way things are going, you know, in 5-10 years, you might just be having a instead of me sitting here, Stuart, it might just be like an iPhone 12, like having this conversation with you.
That'd be quite good. An iPhone 12, oh, gold.
An iPhone 12S Plus.
Oh, yeah, that'll come.
A few thousand,
I suppose, like, that would be cool, James, wouldn't it? Where, like, you could have the text adventure reading things out to you, and then, okay, your cue, what do you want to do? And it does a wee beep, and then you can just speak. And it does, again, whether it would pick my accent up is the thing I would be wary of. But again, there could be backups. You could maybe type as well if you had to. So.
Or you could put on like a really austere English accent, you know, if you had to, or an American one.
Examine the treasure chest.
Check out the box.
That's like, there's a great... I was doing an impression to James last week on Alex, which is the super high quality realistic voice for the Mac, it's creepy because you could hear the thing taking breaths.
Oh yeah, he says
in between each sentence, it actually pauses and takes breaths.
And that's not the voice actor. That is the computer.
Is the computer doing it, and it takes breaths in between each. And I've got, I'm starting to get a bit worried here, you know. It just, oh, it absolutely.
And then you try and turn it off and it says, I'm afraid I can't let you do that, Stuart.
Yeah, that's what, do you really want to shut me down? I'm afraid I can't let you do that, Stuart. And that's the way it, and it's got this, and it's, the voice is actually great, you know. And that's the way you talk, you know, do you really want to shut me down, Stuart? And it doesn't quite breathe as I'm just doing it for the benefit
that's
of the
creepy.
Recording.
That's really creepy. Technology is moving in a very strange direction. I mean, it's great that it's helping you know all of our lives.
But it's scary
at the same time.
Well, as I've said in another podcast, one of the guys at the TechShare conference said, in terms of accessible tech, there's never been a better time to be alive. You know.
In terms of any tech, really, right? I mean, we never slide backwards, do we?
Always seem to go go forward, don't we?
Yeah.
There is actually on tech, there is somebody, I think they're called A System, the company, and they've put a questionnaire out last year on for blind people, and they wanted to know about trying to make a device that would replace both the cane and the guide dog in terms of navigation.
Okay, interesting.
And I thought that would, it was a very interesting, because I'd never had to really think, you know, I just used the guide dog so much.
Yeah.
But I just thought, would I trust a device that was completely, you know, tech-minded? You know, I mean, what happens if the battery dies and I'm halfway up the street?
Yeah, that's a good
You know,
point,
how does it know what's in front of you? How? And so there's actually, I don't know where we're going to be in 20 years' time, even. You know,
it's crazy, actually, to look. I mean, I was watching a video of a band play a concert, and at one point the drummer says, "Okay, now I want everybody to take their phones out and hold them in the air." You know, like candles, like a very cliche thing. But they all take their phones out, and none of them are smartphones. This was like in 2007, and none of them are smartphones. They're all just like the regular, like old, like flip
like
phones,
the Nokias,
or Sony Ericssons. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's crazy. Just in 2007, nobody had smartphones, and now they're everywhere. I don't know anybody who doesn't have a smartphone.
I know a few visually impaired people that don't, but they're older, I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because, you know, they like tactile, so, you know, they want things with big buttons on them. And the smartphone, when you take the tactile side of it away. And I wasn't keen on a smartphone to start with, you know, because it's so different, you know, try to use a touch screen where you've got nothing to, you know, having a guide, if that makes any sense, you know, just having buttons to guide you, you know, the difference, you could see how people could get really frustrated. And as I say, you know, that the gestures on an iPhone or an iPad or what have you, an Android tablet, they're not easy to learn, and a lot of people seem to manage okay where I'm with them, but then when I'm not there and they get stuck, they don't know what they've done wrong. So it's a tricky job, and it does take patience.
I can imagine.
I mean, it would be there's a way you could put you could blank the screen on iDevices. So it's called a screen curtain, and I put the screen curtain on, and I just showed a film sighted person like yourself, James, how to navigate, the basics of navigating with, mm-hmm. you know, the gestural language for voiceover and talkback, and I blanked the screen, and he just went, he just couldn't do it. When he couldn't see, you know, the pictures, even, you know, how the wee icons are on the screen, when he couldn't see them, he just completely went to pot. And I said, well, that's what it's like for somebody like me to try, and so you see how it's not impossible. And he cracked up. He just couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just a really interesting way of doing things.
Yeah, it is interesting.
But the great thing is, you know, with accessibility, whether it's screen readers for Windows or, you know, especially voiceover, what I really love about it is there's nothing on it, especially with the built-in side of it. There's nothing on it that a visually impaired person is unable to do that sighted people can do. You know, you are fully included in the devices. And James and I have been sitting talking about, you know, phones and all the rest of it. And, you know, it's not that we're any different really from sighted people now because of the advancements. That's what I really try and get out of it. And as I say, the independence side, you know, they've just completely changed your life.
I mean, they've changed the world, haven't they? They've changed society. They've changed the way that everybody thinks and behaves.
Yeah, and again, Google, by the way, are doing a huge drive towards accessibility. And the thing that really, you know, please let me win the lottery one day so I could buy one. But you ever heard of, like, the self-driving cars?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how they would, and they don't have a steering wheel or anything, so you're looking at it, if they can make the maps function in there accessible, and we're able to, you know, use gestures to, mm-hmm. you know, type in destinations, and
or even just, like, say the destination.
Or say the destination. Ah,
Or like just it. Think the destination and have the computer read your mind.
You just put a wee, maybe a wee chip, a wee earpiece in, and then just, yeah, very, very interesting. But again, you know, there's another avenue that you could,
yeah,
possibly, you know, a blind person in the front, in the driving seat of a car, oh my God. But again, you know, that
they exist
be.
Right now, though, the self-driving,
self-driving cars.
They're on the road. Google have them out.
They're in America, aren't they? Is it California? Yeah. No, it's not California.
I'm not sure where in America.
It is America.
I know Google are interested. I know Tesla, Elon Musk's company, are very interested in that as well. And electric cars. It's going to... I think things are going to keep changing really quickly.
Actually, there's a point as well. Another bit of technology which is out, and it's a couple of £1,000, but it's called Orcam, and what it is it's glasses that you just put on your head, you know, and they just look like, feel like a normal pair of glasses, and they've got a tiny wee camera on the side of the glasses. It just, you don't even know it's there. It just sits at the side of your head on the glasses, and what you can do is you can actually look at a piece of paper with these, you know, that's got text on it, and it'll read it just by using
a nice one.
You know, like, so if you're in a shop, you could just pick some up off the shelf, look at it. You know, see, if you've got to be quite accurate when you're looking at it, but again, you're going just around with a pair of glasses on now, and it's reading all the different products to you, you know. And
that is crazy.
It's got facial recognition, which I think's great in a way. When we had a demonstration, because say I live on my own, and say I opened the door and it was my mum, I would have programmed my mum in as a face that to recognise, and if it didn't recognise the face, it would say face unrecognisable, and you know right away, I'm dealing with somebody I don't know here, quite possibly, you know. Just fascinating. But again, what I hate about things like that, specialist technology at that, is like that, is the price.
Yeah, I think everybody hates the price.
I mean, well, yeah, but you know, if I'm paying £600 for an iPhone, you're paying £600, or you know, depending on what you want. But you know, you're not getting penalised because of disability, sort of thing. Where like a brailler, which I need, I'm an avid braille user, so. A brailler I needed for university cost £4,200. And I just think, you know, sometimes I feel as though, you know, it's not my fault I need the specialist equipment. And, you know, just then, you know, you put jaws on top of that, there's another £800. And you just think, oh, man. So the price sometimes does go, I mean, I wouldn't pay £2,500 for a pair of glasses that's going to read things to me when my phone does it through its camera anyway, you know, and you're paying £6.99 for an app or that does it. So there's loads of pitfalls and advantages, and it just depends on your own personal viewpoint, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it always is gonna. It's a shame that, you know, there's no subsidy for that kind of technology, because you would think
I think there is.
Oh, is there?
You've got to know where to look, which again, we do that here. You know, we could fund people. I mean, I funded somebody on Monday for a CCTV, which, you know, the difference it made, it was only £100, but, you know, a lot of visually impaired people, especially if they're not working, they can't afford the technology, so there has to be money out there, you know. So I'm sorry, James, I've spoken awful lot this morning.
No, it's been a really interesting show, actually. It's been very enlightening. I think I really want you to show me that camera technology.
Oh, Tap
actually.
Tap C.
I really want to see that. People should download it as well, because it sounds amazing.
It's free, so things like digitise, you'd be paying a wee bit more, but you know, as I say, that the difference it could make is unbelievable. And by the way, I'm here at Five Society for the Blind Monday to Friday if you want to give me a wee call to discuss anything, or again, we could do Twitter as well. I'm sure you won't mind.
Do you have contact info off the top of your head? We can put that in the description.
Yeah, let's put that in the description. I'll give the... Should I give the phone number for here, do you think?
Yeah, by all means.
We have a main number, which is 01592-644-979, and you'll get put through to reception and just ask for Stuart Beveridge. Just, as I say, if you want to discuss anything, that might be the best way to contact us. You can... I don't even mind if you do it through our Monkey Gaming channel. What do you think, James? When we just Twitter wise,
yeah, sure,
we,
go for it.
So at Monkey Gaming FSB is our Twitter feed, and I'll try, and even if you tweet me through that, I can redirect you and get in contact with you through my own email then. So there's a couple of ways there, and I might even put my email address in the description just for anybody who's interested as well. So will that do us, James?
Yeah,
that?
I think it will. It's been a really interesting show.
Another
Lord of the Rings
epic, isn't it? We're getting there. But thanks very much again for listening, and we'll be back next week as usual for another Monkey Gaming podcast.
Yeah, see you next time. Thank you.